Morning, everyone. My name is Robert Griffin. I'm with DataCore Software, so I'm not quite a Microsoft employee, and I'm not here necessarily as a DataCore employee either. I'm working kind of as a consultant today, so I'll be working and talking to you about this session, speeding the transition to responsive virtualized storage infrastructure. This morning's session is really a fresh look on storage virtualization, where we look at the recommendation for achieving performance, availability, and flexibility by virtualizing your storage infrastructure. Everything I discuss today, you'll be able to bring back to your data centers or your customers' data centers. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I was an IT director for managing data centers for the better part of my career, but I kind of like to do things a little bit more fun than that, so let's look at a fun little video. Now, as you guys were entered the room this morning, you were scanned in and you were granted access to my NSA very top secret presentation today. So this is a really good theme for this video I did about a year ago.
This is Michael Mongillo. My family business, Pathecura, does medical waste disposal in New Haven, Connecticut.
My name is Kurt Rowan of 24/7 Tech Ops. I'm a highly trained agent protecting this nation against its enemies.
Our staff is overburdened because the system processes can't keep up with our growth.
But in a past life, I worked IT for companies, from startups to Fortune 500s. I'm out of it now, but I can't turn my back on small and mid-sized businesses stuck using outdated software and hardware.
Before he loses any more money, we need to virtualize an existing server with a 2008 R2 server using Hyper-V.
Some pretty powerful stuff, Kurt.
Who are you, Michael? You're lying!
I swear, I just sent you a message.
Are you sure this will work?
Just do it, Maddie, please!
You can help me, right, Kurt?
Is there anything else you're not telling me about your servers?
Now, of course, that's in all fun, right? That video was done while I was at Microsoft as a contractor 2 years ago. However, previous to that, I was an IT director, so I was in your shoes. I built data centers, I managed data centers. I really was on the customer side of things. I left to work with Lenovo, which I helped launch their server product group, and then I went over to Microsoft, and that was where that video was filmed, and I helped work in their business development OEM team. Since then, I've been at DataCore Software, where I work with ISVs, storage providers, hardwares, providers, OEMs, and help build strategic engagements with those vendors and companies and partners of ours. What I hope you walk away from today's session is really three things. One, that storage virtualization is really the next wave of virtualization. We've had desktop, we have storage and server, and now we are entering the server virtualization wave. This transformation will be innovative, and it possibly could be disruptive, and not disruptive to our users, but disruptive to the way we think about our data centers, think about our storage, and think about how we manage that storage in our environments. Your future architecting decisions should be thought of as storage, as flexible, elastic even, and really in alignment with your infrastructure goals. Now, storage is an issue for all of us. It doesn't start or stop at the data centers, right? My wife is shoes, and my son's clothes, or kids' clothes, and toys. All these things are looking for unique and innovative ways to create storage environments. I could buy a bigger house, but instead, this is an idea of increasing storage. Now, our data centers are not immune to this storage phenomenon either, right? We made things easier when we did server virtualization. One problem often creates another. And in this case, the problem of storage or server virtualization created what we refer to as virtual machine sprawl, right? Virtual machine sprawl created a problem where storage wasn't growing fast enough. And I think this is where we're at now, where, you know, really we have to look at storage and how we can improve it and make it keep up with our dynamic data centers. Henry Ford created the same kind of problem back in his day, right? He created the car, and the car was more affordable, but there were no roads to drive on. There was no fueling stations to fuel it up. So we've gone to a point now where we're able to obviously build out that infrastructure. And we have to look at the same kind of infrastructure improvement in our storage world. The agenda today, we're going to be talking about storage considerations for a private cloud, why virtualization projects fail, and best practices in storage virtualization. Now, I'll be honest, this is the point where you're kind of on the plane and the stewardess says to you, this flight's heading to Orlando. Are you sure you're on the right plane? Truly, this is the point where if you are in the wrong room or feel this session isn't right for you, please feel free to go to some of the other sessions. Your time at TechEd is very important to me, and I want to make sure you get the most value out of your sessions today. So why are we all in this room? We're in this room really because IT has changed, right? We have to be dynamic. We have to grow with the changes that are happening in our environments. Gartner asked a very direct question. What are the drivers for private cloud? What is requiring you to invest the time, money, and energy into this new architecture? I'd like to just open it up to you guys for a quick second here. Tell me, just by show of hands, raise your hands, how many of you are doing this because of quality? Maybe, okay, a few of you. How about Defend IT? One or two? Enabling hybrid models? All right, a few more. What about agility and speed? Okay, that's about right. And business alignment? Very good. What about cost? Big one usually, right? All right. Well, let's look at the results. I think by the show of hands in this room, it was dead on. The amount of hands I saw was just about 55% said agility and speed. I think another 21% said business alignment. And at the end of the day, I think you guys really panned out pretty accordingly to this. Now, many of you may say that I don't know and you just kind of landed here. I didn't ask that one, but you might have landed here and just thought this was a good session to check your email. But hopefully we can agree that 55% of you said agility and speed is the number one reason, cost being at 21%, and business alignment being at 9%. Seriously, we're moving forward to a private cloud for no other reason than to build better, smarter, and for the future. Right? We need to get faster, we need to get smarter, and we need to be more flexible. Now here's the disruptive part. We've seen our OEMs and our software providers, Microsoft and VMware, create this very robust infrastructure. We can move things out and make a lot of changes very quickly. I could walk in any one of your data centers and probably pull a power cord from any one of those of your servers. And yeah, you might not be very happy with me, but you'd have the redundancy in place or the extra capacity, or you'd be able to migrate machines over to a new workload, and that wouldn't be an issue for you. However, what if I did that to your storage? Now, that may not be the same result, right? Some of you may have it, but the majority of you may be very upset with me if I did that. A friend of mine used to work at a restaurant. They went through a change where they were working like the diners used to, where they used to hand write tickets. And the management decided one day that they were going to pull system out, and they're going to put in a computer system. The waitresses and the waiters were very upset. What's wrong with the way the system is now? It works just fine. Why do we have to do this? So the extra staff was really brought in that the night they made the transition. I think it was done on a Tuesday. The customers never realized the change, right? They had enough staff. But the customers were in there, and they were just going about their business, right? They were ordering their meals, they were getting their steaks, everyone was happy. No issues. A couple of days later, the management asked the waitress, how's it going? What do you guys think? Oh, it's great. We can get the orders in. The food's coming out faster. It's better, right? The customers, again, never really knew. Now, this is similar to what we're experiencing now in virtualization, right? This may be a little disruptive for us within this room, for us in the data center. It may be disruptive. But the results will make us, again, appreciate that we are in a private cloud. Now, let me put this picture up. So last weekend, I was out to breakfast with my son and daughter, and they ordered Mickey Mouse pancakes. And I thought, oh, that's kind of funny. That's actually, I'm going down to Orlando next week. I'll tell them I said hi to Mickey for you. But does your storage infrastructure look like this, right? Do you have this kind of application servers and VMware servers or Hyper-V servers all pointing down to this one storage device? Now I know this storage device is, it's honestly rock solid. It's got 40 drives, maybe 80 drives, 120 drives, I don't know. It's got RAID groups, it's got redundant power. It's honestly probably bulletproof. Until it fails. But I'm not a doom and gloom kind of guy, so I'm going to assume that it never fails and everything works just fine. And maybe some of you have this catalog of storage, right? You have the ability to replicate your data between synchronously mirror copies, and I'm going to bet that that's probably the same vendor. So you have, you know, vendor A is on both sides of this replication process here. And you may have undersized to accommodate for 2 to 3 years of growth. And you may be doing okay, and this is good. This is great. You're really rocking now. But you are stuck. You're stuck in your OEM's product roadmap. You're stuck in case you need more storage, right? Your sand may fill up. Now, we have to apply the rules of the private cloud, right? There is a point where we have to be agile and fast in how we can react to these things. So if we run out of storage, we may have to wait for a manufacturer's next release, right? Because they may not be able to, you know, increase storage on that dynamically. We're really not treating the symptom, we're treating the disease. And to look back, this really isn't in alignment with our drivers either. We're locked into a single vendor. We're unable to move up in capacity. I can't use the latest, fastest technologies to increase my speed. For all intents and purposes, I'm stuck. Let me reiterate what those drivers were, right? So agility and speed, cost, and business alignment. We demand these things. We need to do these as faster and a faster rate. Manufacturing innovations, an outdated concept, won't solve tomorrow's problems. The car industry has and is always, seems like, in a struggling state, right? They keep building better cars and better industrial or internal engines or in-combustion engines with better gas mileage and whatnot. But we all know at some point we're going to need a new electric car, and or maybe a hydrogen car, possibly a jetpack, so whatever. That's why we're here. We're here to take your storage infrastructure to the future, not to keep this Mickey Mouse approach going. Now, I don't know how many of you attended yesterday's session, Private Cloud Principles, Concepts, and Patterns. And I've certainly simplified this down. I think he did a really good job of presenting the numerous considerations. And those of you that did, can I see by a show of hands? Okay, there's a good number of you that saw that session. It was a very good session, and it really went into a lot of the principles that you need to consider. I almost wanted to raise my hand and say, hey, what about storage, right? Because everyone talks about this on the server and application level, but storage is kind of like, oh, well, that's not quite ready for the private cloud. Or the principles don't necessarily apply to that because it doesn't need to be as flexible. But I'm here to tell you today it is. All these products are the private cloud, and today's specific conversation will be around storage only, right? I'm really going to look at infrastructure as a service. I'm going to look at how storage is managed within the infrastructure. And I want you to consider, the principles that were talked about yesterday, because I think they're important. I'm going to simplify them down, possibly even oversimplify them down for the purpose of today's conversation, though. One, in order to have a private cloud, you must have some type of resource pooling. You need to have automation, and you need to have self-service. You can't have one without the other. You can't build a self-service portal for your users without having resources pooled or automation that can actually get those, create those tasks. And again, you have to be able to do this across heterogeneous storage devices, right? Now, many of you may think that you're too small for a private cloud, but the principles still apply. Whether you have 5 users or 15,000 users. Actually, before the session started, one of our users, I kind of just probed people to see, ask how much storage you're managing. One managed about 1.5 terabytes, and some were just about a couple hundred gigabytes. It doesn't matter what size you are. These principles are still hold true. Now, you may look at of our co-location facility that will work with you to, if you are smaller, you may work with one of these CSPs or VAR co-location to help you. And you should be in a better position to make sure that you make the right decision if you outsource it, right? So apply these principles and make sure that you get the right decision in the long run. One of our customers, Saginaw Intermediate School District, joined together and they created a community cloud, right? There was no competition, no intellectual property, only was really great for the kids. So there are situations where you could make this transition on a community level, with like-minded businesses or like-minded industry. However, the elephant in the room is that sometimes server virtualizations do fail. And most of the reasons for that are workloads are too mission critical, the costs are too high, or storage performance. And ultimately, storage performance, really from our perspective, seems to be the one that is number one in failing. But failure is not an option, right? So what do we need to consider? If you're going in with a full cloud, it's a full-on commitment. You just can't treat one thing differently than the other. You've got to treat your storage, again, storage conversation today. You've got to treat your storage as mission critical. You've got to treat it as highly available. You must allow for it to be elastic. And you've got to consider all the impacts of networking and automation and costs and whatnot. Let me tell you a secret. The other day, last night, we were out with a couple colleagues of mine, and last year, it's not a secret we went here, but this restaurant happens to be a secret, or bar happens to be a secret. We were talking about last night, last year at TechEd 2011, we were out in Atlanta, and we had a drink after dinner at the establishment. It was a really interesting place. We walked into this lobby of a hotel, and you had to go to this telephone booth, and you had to get a code. One of our friends gave us the code. You had to put in a code, and the door would open, and you go downstairs, and it was just a normal, bar, had beers and wine, whatever. But it was just it was really an interesting place. And how many of you actually live in Atlanta? So a few of you. Have any of you been to this place? I won't mention it by name, but it was just an interesting little secret that I'll share with you guys. So a few of you did. Okay. Let me give you another little secret. Storage virtualization isn't new. It's everywhere. Right? If you look at storage virtualization today, whether it's on an even simple RAID group, there is software running in that RAID group that is managing the disks beneath it. That's a form of software virtualization. The difference here is that I'm asking you to think about taking that software out of that array and putting it into an intermediary spot. Right? Once we do this, we look at server hypervisors, and now we can maximize those resources and minimize our costs while making IT more flexible. And I encourage you to look at server hypervisors the same way. And here's a visualization of what a server hypervisor is, right? So we've got application servers on the top. We've got virtual disks down below that are provisioned up from our storage hypervisor that manage the disk arrays beneath us. This is a very simplistic viewpoint of it, but this is what storage hypervisor is. Some of the benefits of a storage hypervisor are virtualizing your storage. You can pool disks. You can thin provision. You can tier your storage. You can allocate when needed. You can increase performance while making all this highly available. We can deliver on the promise of the private cloud. Storage can become agile. It can increase speed and align with your business, not the Mickey Mouse approach that we've been doing. Now, again, I can't illustrate this any stronger, right? We can do this. Storage virtualization is not about a single vendor's product, right? It's about a new philosophy of how you can manage your storage all together. I don't care if you're using an EMC, a NetApp, a Dell, HP, whatever. The ability to pool all those things together, share those resources to distribute the loads, amortize your costs, right? I don't want you forced into making compromises. I want you to be able to buy the very best storage for whatever reason it is, whether it's flash or a general storage array. I don't want you stuck with X's or Y's, best of whatever they are. I don't want you to be vendor locked. Now, I know and I appreciate, I've been on the other side. I've been an IT director. I know that sometimes I like to be you know, aligned with my partners and have a specific partner for you know, maybe my hardware needs. And I like that I can get my service from one provider. However, you should never feel as if you're stuck, right? The choice should always be yours. Storage virtualization lets you do this, right? You don't have to distribute your workloads across multiple products within the same product line from the storage vendor. You can do that across vendors, across product families, and really maximize your cost savings and load balance across the devices. So what is a storage hypervisor? Let me just show you a quick demo of pooled storage. Okay, let's take a look at the interface here. So just to get concepts a little bit straight here, we look at the world in three different worlds. We have disks, we have disk pools, and virtual disks. So I'm going to first create a disk pool and add an additional disk to that. So if I look at my disk pools here, I've actually created a disk pool for TechEd. And currently it sits in, if I look at the description, I've got one disk here, and this happens to be a SATA disk. It's about a terabyte in size. Now, this is directly attached, but this could be any LUN that you provide up to us. It could come from SAN, any block-level device that you want to provide into the pool. I also have an extra physical disk here. Now, this happens to be, if I look at the properties of this disk here, this is actually a Texas Memory Systems RAM SAN 70 card. So it's directly attached, but it's a flash device. It's 420 gigs of storage, right? So I can take this now and add it to a disk or TechEd disk pool. Now, when I look at TechEd disk pool, it'll go into reclamation. But my pool's increased to 1.32 terabytes. But now I'm able to create virtual disks from here, right? So as I take a virtual disk, I can do create virtual disk. And I'm able to pull whatever I want. Let's just pull a petabyte of data. All right, now this will go through. We'll come back to this in a little bit, and we can actually show you some of this on a client side. But the premise is this, right? I don't necessarily care what device you have, which storage unit you have. I can pull these devices together, create these virtual disks as seamlessly as I just showed today, right? So again, replace whatever vendor you want with your hardware, but the ability to pull these disks, create this hypervisor, create this virtual disk using this hypervisor is key. All right, so if we look back at the disk allocation, so we've created our pool of disks. We now are thinly provisioned, and we're really rocking here. Let's look at kind of the other side of it, right? Our user side. If you ask your user, how much do you think you need of storage, right? What are they going to say? A lot? Even more next year, right? How many of you have this answer? Yeah, it's probably half the room. We all see this. I mean, this is what we see from a day-to-day basis. The question really is, why do I need to provision that entire LUN or that space today for future growth? I can fulfill just in time. And let me be absolutely clear here. I am not talking about thin provisioning on a single hardware device. Yes, hardware manufacturers can do thin provisioning. I'm talking about thin provisioning across your entire storage infrastructure, right? So as you add in all these different storage devices, I am thin provisioning from any disk source. So now we can pull disks from any manufacturer, provision it all thinly. What other benefits are there to storage virtualization? Performance. We expect high performance from our storage infrastructure, right? But we all know that, you know, the shortest point from A to B is the direct path, right? If I'm adding an extra hop into this path, you're going to say, Rob, you must be slowing it down. But no, that's not the case. Here's a baseball example for you. In the 1970s, Dave Concepcion realized that if he really wanted to get the ball to first base faster, he would deliberately bounce the throw. Made no sense, but it was true. He literally added a hop to first base, but it became faster. We all know why now. However, at the time, it was revolutionary, right? No one else was doing it. It was innovative, right? It's the same case with storage virtualization. Most of you would think adding a hop would increase latency. However, the methodology we use, our cache we use to get the storage and the application closer to the application by utilizing memory is the key here. I'll do more on that in a minute. But I want you to understand that placing a storage hypervisor in front of an array will not slow you down by no way. Yet it's counterintuitive. I get that. I understand it. I was probably skeptical at first. Trust me. I know. You don't. But we'll see. Storage virtualization is key. The key component of storage virtualization is really the level one cache, right? So we move cache up to a terabyte of cache into memory. We're able to do some really cool things here. So once we have this hypervisor in place, we're now able to cache. We're able to see the IOs that are coming in, and we're able to balance those IOs, right? So as we see read IOs coming in, we can read ahead. So if I see, I can even find patterns in that. So if I see blocks 1 through 10 are read first, last, and then after blocks 1 through 10, 10 through 20 requested previously, I'm going to be smart enough to read blocks 1 through 10. And oh yeah, and by the way, array, go fetch me blocks 10 through 20 because I think the user is going to need it. So I can proactively and be proactive about my read aheads. So once I have it in cache, obviously it's going to be faster from cache directly to the application. And on writes, we do something very similar, right? So we write call less. So we allow, we acknowledge on the write to cache, and the application's happy, it gets its write acknowledged, but we'll write call less. So we'll take several writes, we'll coalesce them, we'll spin the disks up, and we'll fill those, maximize those SAUs or storage allocation units, and we'll distribute that load across. It's kind of like RAID, right? If you look at RAID on just a bunch of disks, right? You got RAID 5 and all those blocks get written across the drives. But the power of this is I'm able to do that from a cached array, an uncached array, of just a bunch of disks. It doesn't matter. I can write across, RAID across, essentially your entire storage infrastructure. Now, there's some really good benefits to that, too, and I'll get into those a little bit later, too. Let's talk about traditional tiering now that we're on the actual storage itself. Storage tiering, typically you're an architect, you're a storage to an application. It's a manual allocation. It's not flexible. It's not agile in nature. You look at your fastest storage and you align it with the most important applications or workloads. You can take tier 2 and tier 3 and set them to their appropriate applications. Whatever the case may be, you manually do this. How many of you right now have an ERP application that you dedicate your fastest memory to or storage to? A lot of you. Yeah, I mean, that's the traditional way of doing it. I'm going to talk to you about auto-tiering, right? You know, when we do this traditionally, though, the industry says we end up with about 5% of capacity being used for fast storage, 35 for that mid-range stuff, and 60 for the high capacity. But I think I know we can do better with these numbers. When we add the storage hypervisor in the loop, we're able to now do some really cool things, right? So say we take that 5% from the last. Of that 5% of your storage, how much of it do you really think, in the traditional way, you're utilizing? On a manual allocation, I bet you 60, 70, maybe an 80%. Maybe I'll just use the 80-20 rule. I bet you 80% of that data is actually stale. And although 20% of it's firing its best that it can, you're really not maximizing that 5%. And don't let me get you wrong. Flash storage is fantastic, but it does have a limitation, right? If you install it directly on a host, you're limited to that one host. So, auto-tiering allows you to maximize the use of that flash across the environment. You're also able to combine pooled storage, right? So thin provision, auto-tier, they have all this is great in the private cloud. Let me go through auto-tiering a little bit in depth. So storage virtualization, we can consolidate heterogeneous storage. Got that, right? Multiple types of storage in the pools. The next logical question is, how do we make the best of that device when we need to? And the answer is, we can. Auto-tiering allows us to do this. There's two components to auto-tiering. One, the disk pool. Two, the virtual disk. The disk pool, as you insert disks into the disk pool, you assign tiers, up to 15 tiers, but you don't necessarily need 15 tiers. Most of the time, 3 to 4 tiers is probably most appropriate. As you move these tiers in, we will then develop a way, or we have developed a way, to auto-move blocks. And let me go through this a little bit differently, right? If I was working at, I don't know, how many of you bartended through college? If you're bartending through college and you set up the bar, whatever beer was being sold, you put that one right in front, right? Maybe it was Heineken, maybe it was Budweiser, I don't know. But whatever it was close to the top. Meanwhile, that Pabst Blue Ribbon was near the bottom, right? Storage virtualization, virtual disk allocation is the same concept. We take that virtual disk, we break it down into individual chunks, and then we thinly provision it back out. And when that block is accessed on a more regular basis, we take that in a traffic cop, if you will. We'll take that traffic, those blocks, and move them to the right tier. So the more you have a data on a read, the more you're going to move it over to the proper disk pool, and it's going to end up in the right tier. You're also able to create profiles here. So you're able to move and allow profiles to be set for individual virtual disks. So if you have a customer that, we'll get more into this a little bit later, but if you have a customer that you want to give very high profile to, you can move that disk and make sure that that resource always is in the top two tiers or top tier. Again, agility, it's all about choice. It's all about making your storage infrastructure work for you, not working on your storage infrastructure. So I know we're talking about private clouds, and excuse me while I just go off for a little bit here. Private clouds, absolutely, your own storage infrastructure. However, there may be a point where you want to consider a hybrid cloud. And we do work with many other providers that where you can actually take your auto-tiering architecture and actually pull in a public cloud resources to dynamically allocate additional storage when you need it. So we've covered a lot of ground here, but we're in the home stretch. So we've defined how storage virtualization can make you more agile and faster, how it can help you save costs. Now let's look at about the third driver, right? That is aligning IT with your business. It's critical to accomplishment. Really, this is, I know when we, agile and faster was our number 55%, but I feel like this is still just almost as important, really, because it really is critical. Every aspect of your storage environment needs to be able to be controlled for you to be able to get to the full level of private cloud. In the past, we used to, I'm going to go a little story here. In the past, we used to watch movies, right? We used to go to plays. Someone told us when to go see it. We would go. We'd buy a ticket. We'd go and watch it. Then TV came on, and we watched TV. But the networks would tell us exactly when the show was on, and we would have not very much choice in that experience. Then movies and theaters popped up. We were able to go to movies. And now we were able to go buy Blockbuster movies and watch movies from at will. We thought we were great, right? I can watch a movie anytime I want. I don't need to go to the movie and let them tell me what time it is. Then we got, obviously, DVRs and TiVos and all those fun things. And now we can even stream, right? So our end users are able to stream content whenever they want, wherever they want, from their phone to their computer to their TV to their Blu-ray device. The options are endless. Our customers are demanding this. And it doesn't stop on the consumer level. It starts at the storage level. All these things are out on someplace, sitting on storage someplace, right? So we need to look at how we can create or allow our storage to let our users be able to pick the right service level for them, right? You could pull this out in any way you want from your self-service portal, but being able to manage your storage and the profiling that goes associated with it, where you're able to take storage dynamically, move it to different profiles, increase it, make it more reliable, give it HA, whatever the case may be, And again, this is all across heterogeneous storage devices. I don't need to have my vendor bless the other storage device. I don't need, you know, the vendor to bless its own storage device. It doesn't have to be so complicated and hard, right? It's got to be agile, and it's got to be fast. Of course, management is key too. You have to be able to, you've made the investment in the management management suites that you have. You need to be able to manage your storage from one central console, whether it's the console from the vendor you buy your storage virtualization from, whether it's the Microsoft or any other flavor of management. You have to be able to manage your storage. And I don't want you to compromise. I don't want you to have to go rewrite your self-service portal because you've switched out your storage. You have to be able to dynamically change out your storage while not breaking the business, right? We have to be aligned with the business. We can't be an inhibitor for the business. Now, how do we architect for always up, right? We have to consider cost and performance, right? High availability, being resilient, we need to be able to be expandable. I mean, these are all things that are just... they don't break now that we're in a private cloud, right? So typically, storage virtualization allows us, again, to pool those dynamic resources, right? But let's talk about how we can make them more resilient and expandable. Now, I hate to be doom and gloom. I really don't. I'm truly, personally, an eternal optimist. But talking about the unexpected and talk about the expected are things we have to think of when we're doing and developing our private cloud. We have to anticipate facility outages. We have to avoid risk and plan downtime. Storage manufacturers make great storage devices, don't get me wrong. We wouldn't be anywhere without them. However, they're incompatible with each other. So if I'm at the point where my AC device breaks in one data center, I need to be able to have that data sitting in there in another data center. And I don't want you to go out and have to buy twice as much storage from the same vendor. I want you to be able to maybe utilize some existing storage you have, maybe get a better, you know, if it doesn't have to be like-to-like hardware, maybe you want to purchase something different. Again, choice is yours. You have the choice to do what you need to do to make sure that your environment has the right of high availability. Now, we can plan for the unexpected, but we should also plan for the expected. You will at some time need to upgrade your storage environment. SAN Symphony V or SARM storage virtualization makes that seamless as possible. It could be non-disruptive. You can repair your storage. You can replace it. You can upgrade it. You can decommission it whenever it's convenient. You don't have to schedule it. I mean, you can have literally, middle of operations on a normal day and be able to do this. There's no scheduling nightmares. Users are completely unaware, right? Everything's fine in my cloud. To put it in perspective, the prestigious New York City Presbyterian Hospital relocated half their data center from New York to New Jersey without taking down users. They maintain a site-to-site replication. They have disparate storage devices. I mean, this is happening. There's lots of people doing this. Don't get me wrong. Their hot sites are on different sides of the Hudson, right? They're separated between two states. They've got dark fiber between them. It looks like this, right? They've got high availability between two sites with synchronous mirroring, different storage devices on both sides. They can add, move, remove, thin provision. They can do all the great features across any storage device they want. They have removed themselves from the shackles, if you will. Now, we also have to think about disaster and countermeasures, right? If both sites are, you know, working every day, it's a sunny day, it's wonderful, everything's good in my cloud, right? Everything's fine. But there are points and times where we need to be able to move our data centers. You know, and there's a storm, big storm, and both data centers may need to go down, and we have to be able to lighten up a DR center. Let's look at that from an architectural perspective, right? The disaster site, asynchronous replication across these virtual disks, right? But I can also go across to another site. I can go to a third DR center, and again, have absolutely no common hardware between all three of these sites. I can have completely different gear at every one of these sites. And all manage these from a single management, single console. Now, sometimes we all want a little bit of time back. Or in the storage world, we want data that was after yesterday's backup. Maybe a mistake from the user. It's just an oops moment, right? Now, if you're giving your users control to provision the application, why not give them control to rewind it, right? Give them the TiVo for storage, continuous data protection. Give them the ability. Every time a travel sci-fi movie like Star Trek or Source Code has a hero trying to do some miraculous device that will somehow return him back to his world just before the disaster struck, and the disaster never happened, storage virtualization is the same thing. You can go back in time. It's a time machine for your data. And obviously, you do this for the most sensitive data that you may have. Maybe financial, customer data, credit card data, whatever the case may be. But again, it's device independent. There's no performance degradation. It's VSS aware, so you can PowerShell it again, command it. You can make it automated. There's a lot of options here. And part of this technology is really around snapshots, right? And one of the most interesting things we've been doing, not most interesting, but one of the interesting things we've been doing lately has been looking at different ways to look at how we manage data and how we can, even within our own product, help our business, our partners, do more and better things with their applications. So one of these options was snapshots, right? So one of my partners out of Virginia or New York, office in both, Savage.io, came to me, and they were having trouble with their VDI solution. They asked for our help. So if you look at how IOs are given to a system, we have this kind of chart here. I'll bring it up. Snapshots really allow us to take VDI, for example. You have one golden master image, and you've got, say, 100 of those images exactly like that, right? The snapshot methodology combined with our caching kind of works like this. First time that first machine boots, it doesn't matter which one it is, the first time one of those machine boots, that data in that snapshot is brought into memory, right? Because we cache all those reads. And we're going to let them sit there until they get replaced, right? So as much cache as we have in the system, we'll let those reads sit there, the data will sit there until it's either replaced by writes or there's new reads that come in. But as that system sits there, it's sitting in memory. So the first machine that boots, that goes from disk to memory. The next 99 machines, in the next example I'll show you, are all booting from memory, right? So those machines are pointing right back to those original pointers. They're pulling the data real time, in sync with all the others. And there's some significant performance increases here. And don't be limited to just VDI. I think this technology is obviously it's great for backups, and you can do some cool things with the backups too. But there's new ways you can think of even existing technologies like snapshots. And again, snapshots aren't on the device itself, the hardware device itself. They're done at the hypervisor level. So it doesn't matter whether the device, if the bunch of disks beneath us supports snapshots or not. We support snapshots across heterogeneous devices. And we can snapshot from one platform to the other. Again, it doesn't matter. Let me show you a quick demonstration of this VDI quickly. While I set this up, I'll be clear. Both on the left and right side of this demo are from the same exact server. So you're going to see a time-lapse video here. All right. So on the left-hand side, you have the same hardware. We took literally the same server. We installed just Hyper-V, and this is one little caveat with this is some of this was limited by the management. I think we could do even better than these numbers, but real out of the box. No system management, no virtual machine management, nothing above the layer of Hyper-V with the in Hyper-V management console that comes with out of the box. On the left, we have the same hardware booting up. On the right, we have the same hardware with data core. So obviously, this is sped up for demonstration purposes, time-wise. I think it's about 5 times faster. So within 2 minutes and 34 seconds, on the right, we've booted up all 100. So we've done a simulated bootstorm here, right? On the left, without data core in the loop, again, same exact hardware, same exact process, these machines are chugging along, really trying to keep up with the I.O. The This is one VDI example. This will take about 7 minutes to complete. Well, in retrospect, it's fast forwarding here in about 5x speed. But you can do this across any other type of applications you may have. You may have web servers that this may work for. You may have application servers that that have a lot of the same content, and you want to maximize the number of instances, and not have to deploy across and take up those additional resources. You can really combine, again, all the way from the top level, from the processor, all the way down to the storage level. So please see me after the session. If you have any ideas around this, I'd be happy to help you and see if there's some kind of architectural thing we can do. And finally, we're all optimistic. Our businesses are growing. They're going to grow, right? So whether it's through natural growth or through acquisition, while on acquisition, that actually brings up another good point. How many of you actually do acquisitions? Good number, right? I mean, that's one of the greatest ways to grow your business. What do you do with those assets when you purchase them? I mean, surely it's not part of your due diligence. Yeah, it may hit your due diligence what infrastructure you have, but you're not going to make a buying decision based on whether they have the same storage infrastructure as you do. You just end up with all this extra gear, right? And then you've got to reevaluate. Are you going to put them on your gear? Are you going to put them, keep their gear? What's the story going to happen? Storage virtualization frees you to take those acquisitions, move that data that they have on their existing storage infrastructure, move it over to our infrastructure or storage virtualization, right? And use it, right? You bought it, use it. Either way, fact is, growth will happen, right? We will go from a $200 million company to a $500 million company, and we'll go from 500 users to 1,000 users. The rate may be different, but the growth will happen. You need to have storage infrastructure that grows as well. You need healthy consumption across your private cloud. It's for it to grow. Again, you have to architect for scalability up front, laying out the groundwork to increase not only disk capacity, but throughput of the infrastructure. This is accomplished by scaling out the storage virtualization nodes commensurate with demand. Many of the businesses I work with are constantly expanding, if not by internal growth, but by acquisition. Storage virtualization allows you to acquire new technology assets and deploy them in a matter of days, migrate the data off them, then increase your pool size and unreuse the arrays. This is all possible today, in the box, it's there. Use it. Storage virtualization also allows you to use the best products in the market. But where should you start? I think I covered this a little bit earlier, but you're able to use existing hardware now. You could create a storage virtualization device. You can point this existing LUNs or new LUNs to this device, and you can get started with existing gear. There's really no new net hardware. There's some software you have to go off and install and whatnot and buy. But you really can get started now. Now, if you're going to start in development, it might be a good place. You might want to use test case scenarios. You can use maybe web servers. There's a lot of different areas where it's good. Most suitable workloads, not initially transition to the cloud. Those with short lifespans and more tolerant SLAs. In conclusion, thank you for joining me this morning. I firmly believe storage virtualization is the next wave of virtualization. This transformation will be innovative. Have no doubt. There's going to be a lot of changes, and you're going to see more and more innovation along this. There's products, computing products, and other products that are coming in. And it may be possibly disruptive, not necessarily for end users. I think that they'll never see the light of day, just like the restaurant example I gave you earlier. But the change in our principles and our architecting will require us to take this level of detail into account. Your future architecting decisions should think of storage as flexible, elastic even, and in alignment with the other business and infrastructure goals. Thank you all again. I really would appreciate if you'd fill out an evaluation on your way out today. My contact information is here. If you have any questions, please, come down off the stage, and they need to move this booth out, and I'll take any questions on the side over here. But thank you. Some related content for you. If there's some breakout sessions, relevant breakout sessions, I will be at the product demo at booth 509. So I'll be at DataCorp Software back at booth 509 for the remainder of today and most of the week. We also will be at the Learning Center as well. Some additional resources for you. Please feel free to tap into these resources. There's some great resources out there. A little housekeeping. Please fill out the evaluation. I want you to win the Xbox and really appreciate some really great feedback. Here's the Microsoft tag. You can scan this and fill the evaluation form out that way. And thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the rest of your Tech Ed.